From Santa Barbara, California, The Timeless Voyager with Bruce Stephen Holmes. Talk radio for the new age. Interviews with well-established professionals in the fields of New Age philosophy, holistic health care, energy healing, psychic phenomena, and extraterrestrial encounters. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes, The Timeless Voyager.
I'm here right now with Barry Bedell, longtime student of the Urantia book and publisher of the Concordix of the Urantia book. Welcome to the show, Barry.
Thank you, Bruce. Nice to be here.
All right. This sure took long enough for me to get to here, didn't it? All right, let's jump right into it. What is the Urantia book?
Well, Bruce, that's a very interesting question. It's difficult to describe a 2,097-page book in just a few moments, but I'll do my best. It is purporting to be the fifth epical religious revelation to our planet, whose name, according to the Urantia book, according to the celestial beings on high, our planet is Urantia. And the Urantia book, I believe, is a synthesis of religion, cosmology, and philosophy that is entirely consistent with today's science.
All right, what does Urantia mean?
Urantia means Earth, the name of our world.
So the planet that we're living on right now is actually called Urantia by whoever wrote this book.
Well, according to the celestial powers.
How did this big book get here and who wrote it?
Well, that again is easier asked than answered. The book was written by a large number of celestial personalities, all of whom are identified as the authors of the various chapters, or as the book calls them, papers. And all of these authors were able to communicate what they had to say through an anonymous individual back in the late 1920s and early 1930s.
Let me interrupt.
Yeah,
you.
Sure.
Was this individual channeling this information?
Well, I think not in the sense that we refer to channeling today. The individual was scarcely aware of what was going on. The individual presumably did not invoke the authors to present this information, but was simply a disinterested subject through whom the various authors were able to communicate their messages.
So this person did not start out by wanting to channel information. It just started coming through.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay, I interrupted you. You were telling me a little bit about... Were there a group of people then that got together and put this book together?
Yes, at the time, actually before these papers began to come through, there was a group meeting in Chicago, Illinois, studying and listening to lectures about medicine, religion, psychology, topics of that sort. And as the papers began to materialize, they were privileged to hear the papers read, not by the subject who received them, but by through another party that was in touch with the personality who received them.
All right, now that we know this, when was it published and why isn't it better known?
Good questions. The book was not published until 1955. It was published by the Urantia Foundation, which was formed in 1950 for the purpose of publishing the book. It is a nonprofit organization. And the policy of the Urantia Foundation has been to largely leave dissemination up to word of mouth, one individual telling another. They have not sought to gain a great deal of notoriety for the book or to bombast it through the mass media. It's largely intelligent people like yourself that have heard about it through some other individual rather than having heard about it on television or having read about it in a newspaper or a magazine.
And again, why isn't it better known? I mean, before having met you, I didn't know anything about this book.
Well, probably because the foundation has gone to such pains to keep it out of the public media.
It seems silly. I mean, you would spend all that time and money and effort publishing a book and then trying to keep people from knowing about it.
Well, I tend to agree with you. I think their motives were pure and are pure in that they do not want to appear to be confrontational, or they do not wish to appear to be proselytizing on any other religion. The Urantia book is not here as a new religion or to supplant or to replace any other religion or belief system. And it's really a tool to be used by those who will benefit from it. And the foundation and most of the readers, certainly myself included, have no quarrel with any of the great established religions and are not seeking to woo people away from any belief system that is satisfactorily serving their needs.
Well, I think we're going to investigate that in a few minutes. You publish the Concordex of the Urantia book. What exactly is that?
The Concordex is a coined word meaning concordance and index. And the reason it was created by my late father, Clyde Bedell, was because in the 2,097 pages of the Urantia book, it's like inheriting or coming into ownership of a gigantic castle with thousands of rooms, every room filled with treasures. But without a map or a guide, it's hard to quickly go to that which you're particularly most interested in seeing, or to find your way back to a room that you would like to visit again. And so the Urantia book allows the student to quickly enter the Urantia book at any place of that individual's particular interest.
You mean the Concordex?
The Concordex, right. Does, right. The Concordex, I must add, is not approved of by the publisher of the Urantia book. It is strictly a private work, yet extremely helpful to nearly all serious students of the Urantia book.
What is the purpose of the Urantia book now that we've talked about it?
Well, the purpose, of the book is to bring a greater awareness of the individual's ability and necessity for getting into personal contact with God, the Creator.
Now, this is the same God that we all talk about. This is not a new God.
Absolutely not.
All right. So this is the same God.
Right.
All right. Okay. People are going to call me up and ask me what God we're talking about.
Although
here.
The God as described in the Urantia book is perhaps a much kindler and gentler and more powerful God than many people are accustomed to thinking about, and also very much more personal God than most people have any idea of. For example, many people are searching for God. There's an inner craving to know more about God. And yet, most people tend to think of God as someplace way up in the sky, and they look for him afar. Whereas, according to the Urantia Book teachings, there is an actual perfect fragment of God indwelling every normal human being on the planet. Everybody has that ability to contact God simply by contacting his divine presence that indwells the person.
All right, so is Urantia a religion? Is it a new religion? Is it even a religion?
No.
All right.
No, it is really here, I believe, to leaven all religions. There is great good in all of the major world religions. And the Urantia book is here to build on that goodness and to increase understanding and the effectiveness of all religions.
Now, when we started, you said that the book was the fifth epical revelation.
Right, that's what the book itself purports to be. I believe it is.
What were the others? I mean, I had no idea there were any others. I don't even know what they are. Maybe you could tell us.
Well, the one that most people are familiar with is the fourth epical revelation, which was the life of Jesus.
All right, so that was an epical revelation, meaning something big happened.
Something extraordinarily major.
All right. What was the third?
The third was the appearance on earth of Machaventa Melchizedek.
I mean, just never heard of these people. That's
well, Melchizedek is mentioned briefly in the Bible.
Oh, that's interesting. So tell me a little bit about that.
But he is the being that, according to the Urantia book, that made the covenant with Abraham as a means of keeping alive in the world the concept of the one God.
Is this the covenant that they had in, what was the name of that movie? Oh, well, for trivia people out there.
The third, a much better known couple would be Adam and Eve.
Oh, they're part of the third also?
They are the third epical.
Now, what was the name of this other person with Abraham?
Machaventa Melchizedek.
Now, he's mentioned in the Bible, what, just in a few verses?
He's mentioned very fleetingly. But simply as an extraordinarily high being.
But the Bible does not tell us much about him.
No, it doesn't.
All right.
Just as I might mention, the fourth part of the Urantia book, comprising about a third of its 2,097 pages, consists of the life and teachings of Jesus. And actually, the Bible itself talks comparatively little about Jesus, about how he actually lived his life day by day, about his family, about the teachings that kind of got lost as the earlier followers of Jesus concentrated more on his death and resurrection rather than on the actual life and teachings.
All right, before we get into this now, what about the first two epics?
Oh, the second one, I believe, would have been the Caligastia revelation.
Oh, that's right. This was about the Lucifer
and,
Manifesto.
Somewhere I've left out one.
All right. Okay, now, so there are five of them anyway. And this is the fifth.
This is the
now,
fifth.
Now, so what they're saying is that they are pretty big in the spectrum of importance in time.
That's true.
All right.
But it's again, it's not something that is to be thrust upon anybody.
All right. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. I think your guest is very interesting. I have a question regarding the Urantia book and how it deals with basic biblical, or how we basically interpret the Bible and we look at the dichotomy of good and evil and sin, and there's a tendency to really divide the two in our society. And I wonder How does the Urantia book deal with that and deception? I don't know if you get the gist of my question.
I'm not really sure that I do, but I'll try to answer a little bit, and then if I'm not answering, try me again here.
Okay.
First, there was the Old Testament, which had a great deal of truth in it. And then Jesus appeared, and as a result of his life and teaching, the New Testament built on the best of the old, but also introduced new knowledge. And now comes the Urantia book, which again builds on the very best of the New Testament and introduces a great deal of new material. Now, what was it you wanted about sin?
Well, I think my particular question is, I think the Urantia book is really interesting, and as is the whole New Age movement, but there is also just the whole concept. I mean, people live their lives on certain morality that they just look at sin and they have a basic idea that there is good and evil and that the Bible is the way it is. And they're basically fundamentalists, fundamentalist background tends to. I don't know how the Urantia book, let's change the question a little bit. How can you follow the guidelines of the Urantia book and still maintain the doctrines of, say, more traditional religions?
I think that's a good question. I think what she's asking basically is what is it that the Urantia book tells us to do? Is that right? Is that what you're probably...
Well, yeah, I think so. I think the question needs to be a little broader to bring up the dialogue.
Okay.
Right. Well, I'm not sure that you would follow all of the dogmas and doctrines of established religion if you were trying to follow what the Urantia book teaches. Certainly, it teaches the personal relationship of every individual with God that is attainable. Mm-hmm. And if a person seeks to develop that, it follows naturally that they then want to be of greater service to their human brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus actually taught the fatherhood of God. God is the parent of all peoples, which inevitably, difficult as it may seem at times, means that we're all brothers and sisters. And when we recognize this and we respect the importance and the uniqueness of each individual, if we truly want to live the way that God would like us to, we really want to treat our brothers and sisters fairly and with respect and with justice and to be of service to them.
Yeah, well, anyway, I'm looking forward to hearing more about this because I think the Urantia book is real interesting and I think it has a lot of good things to say. I want to say that I haven't read all of it, no, and I found...
Yes.
So, and the Concordex, too. So that's how I became familiar with it. Someone told me about it years ago and so keep talking.
Well, thank you.
Let's talk about the Lucifer Rebellion. Let's go right to it. Let's find out what the story is here.
Well... One of the reasons people wonder, you know, how, if there is a loving God, how can the world that we're living in be so fraught with difficulties, with wars and crime and disease and cruelty and all of these awful things?
You really ran through them there.
And probably we could go on.
The list is as long. That's right. The list is as long as the campus, probably.
And one of the reasons that some of these problems are exacerbated is due to the Lucifer Rebellion, which really, I guess you could say, in quotation marks, was a war in heaven.
Right. Now, we know when we read the Bible that somewhere along the line, we come across the word or the person, Lucifer, the entity, the angel, who was cast out. That's all the Bible says.
Yes, Lucifer was a very high angel. And because he fomented a rebellion against God, became a fallen angel.
And he took with him Satan, who was his lieutenant, and the then planetary prince of Urantia, Caligastia, and a great many additional angels and other spiritual beings.
All right, now let's just stop for a second, because this stuff can go by fast. Caligastia was on Earth.
He was on Earth.
Or Urantia, that's right.
On Urantia as the planetary prince.
So he was kind of like the president of the world, so to speak.
Only a spiritual being.
All right. And he worked under who?
He worked under Satan and under Lucifer.
Oh, so Lucifer, Satan, and Caligastia are
three entirely different personalities.
All right, because in the Bible, I think they're basically, we always think of them as the same personality.
Well, they're not the same, but they all went down the same unfortunate trail.
They all agreed in this particular rebellion.
Exactly.
All right. So I didn't mean to interrupt you when I was...
Right. Well, in any event, this occurrence set back the evolutionary and the spiritual development of the Earth greatly. In fact, the Earth, according to the Urantia book, was quarantined from the universe spirit circuits. For example, just like now, in looking at the problems that we're having in the Persian Gulf area, we see CNN having live reports from Baghdad, from Helsinki, from Saudi Arabia, and so forth. And we're able to be tuned in to what is going on virtually any place in the world.
Okay.
And normally, a world such as ours would be able to be tuned in to the circuits of the entire universe. But because of this rebellion, our world has been quarantined, much as the way the United Nations today are attempting to quarantine Iraq for their transgression.
So in other words, the reason we have the question of is there other life out in the universe is not because of any other reason except that we've been quarantined.
Well,
other places,
there's all kinds of the universe, according to the Urantia book, is teeming with life. Many worlds, such as ours, where there are mortal creatures, and a whole host of a different variety of celestial personalities, plus the architectural worlds that were actually designed and built, just as our architects design and build cities, where following death and following our universe progression as we begin to move towards perfection, we visit and abide on for a while.
Okay, the Urantia book is divided into four parts. Would you just give us a rough idea as to what the four parts are and maybe a brief description of each one so that we can...
Very, very briefly.
All right.
The first part is titled...
We're looking right at it.
The central and the super universes.
Right.
And that encompasses all of creation. And it describes the types of worlds, the cosmology of the universe, the nature of God, and of his myriad helpers in running such a far-flung and vast and complex operation. The second part is about the local universe of Nebadon, which is the universe in which our world exists. And it also talks about the personalities that inhabit and run that universe. In fact, the individual that we know on Earth as Jesus is actually Michael of Nebadon, who is the creator of this particular local universe. The third part is called The History of Urantia, and it tells about how the Earth was formed. It talks about how life was established on the earth. It talks about the first human beings who, according to the book, were not Adam and Eve, by the way, about the development of the various races, the tribes, the nations, about what government ideally ought to be and someday no doubt will be. And the fourth part is the life and teachings of Jesus in exquisite, almost day-by-day detail, including his birth, his family, how he solved problems in going through life day by day, and his teachings, his death, his resurrection and reappearance.
Who was Jesus?
He is on the universe level, Michael of Nebadon, who, with the universe mother spirit, which is introduced, I think, for the first time anywhere in the Urantia book, are the creators of the universe. But as part of his rites of passage, so to speak, it was necessary for him to incarnate in the various forms of the creatures under his domain. And his last incarnation, the seventh of his bestowals in other form, was as Jesus of Nazareth.
He had a family according to the Bible, Mary and Joseph.
Those were his parents.
Matter of fact, according to the Bible, he was an only child, I think.
They don't really talk about
his
family.
I don't know if they
family.
Say that or not. Why don't you? No. Does the Urantia book talk about his family?
Indeed it does. He was the firstborn of Joseph and Mary. And he also had several brothers and sisters. The importance of this information, I think, is that when Jesus was about 14 years old, his father, who was a contractor, was killed in an accident. And here's this 14-year-old youth suddenly has thrust upon him, as the oldest son, the responsibility for running a family. So he was both father and brother to his parents' other children. And that gave him great understanding of the vicissitudes of living and the trials that all parents and all children go through. And the Urantia book account of his life and how he dealt with those things make the biblical Jesus literally, to me and to many other readers of the Urantia book, come to life. You can have a much greater understanding of him and a much greater appreciation of who he was. In fact, I've heard some people who have not been terribly impressed with the biblical Jesus say that by reading the Urantia book, suddenly they come to a great appreciation and understanding of who indeed he really was and is.
Why, if this book has all this information in it, why, or let's start this way, are there theologians who are unhappy with this book?
I'm not sure that I would say theologians that are unhappy with it. There are certainly theologians by the thousands that have never read the book. And I think the reason for that is that they tend to be academically trained, and before they are want to invest their time in reading anything, they want to know the academic credentials of the authors. And while the authors of the Urantia book have, I think, extraordinary credentials, they do not have degrees from any of our Urantia theological seminaries, just as Jesus refused to sit at the feet of the rabbis and was not, in fact, a rabbi, and yet he was the greatest lay preacher of all time. He was a layman. There are ministers that draw quite heavily on the Urantia book and spice up their sermons with many of the truths that it contains. But because of the nature, because it seems esoteric, because it doesn't have human authorships, many of them are reticent to mention it to their flock for fear that the flock would be upset about anything other than something that is strictly biblical.
All right, how about this then? Tell me something that's reasonably controversial from the Urantia book, having to do with the life of Jesus. How about something really controversial?
Well, one of the...
Something that would make the fundamentalists call.
Well,
they won't call.
We welcome a call from them,
and our
purpose certainly is not to antagonize them, because we all worship Jesus as the Lord. But the fundamentalists believe that Jesus had to be sacrificed on the cross to atone for the sins of mankind, that every child born onto this earth, for some reason, I guess due to what they think of Adam and Eve's sin, is guilty and needed Jesus to die as a human sacrifice in order that they might someday be saved. Well, this concept is quite repugnant to the authors of the Urantia book, who teach that God is a loving parent. And Bruce, you're a parent. I'm a parent. We are certainly in many ways less godly than we would like to be, but can you imagine demanding the death of one of your children to in some way appease you for some imaginary sin that somebody else committed? Doesn't make sense to me. It's a concept built on ancient Jewish teachings of a sacrifice, sacrificial animals and so forth. And here along comes the early Christians with the idea of the ultimate sacrifice, the Son of God. And it played to a large audience that was into sacrifice. But I think that we have certainly progressed to the point where we our sense of justice and fairness tells us that the sacrifice of an innocent, wonderful personality doesn't make sense.
Well, I think you may have stirred a little bit here. We've got a call coming in. We'll sure find out what it's about. I'm really excited about this. We'll see. Hello, you're on the air.
Does the Urantia book discuss what happens to us after we die?
The answer, I'm happy to say, is affirmative in each case.
All right, why don't you be specific about that?
Yes, indeed. According to the Urantia book, the primary prerequisite for survival is faith in God, a desire to know more about God.
But does it say anything about what happens to us after we die, is what I'm interested in.
What happens to us, specifically?
Yes.
Okay. According to the Urantia teachings, we proceed to a mansion world. You know, in the Bible, John said, he got the message, my house has many mansions. And on the mansion worlds, we are reconstituted with a different form of body, not entirely spiritual and assuredly not physical. And at that time, we gradually recall all of the survivable experiences that we've gained on this earth. Relationships and things having to do with any kind of spiritual significance or lasting meaning are recalled in our next life. And we also have a chance at that time to, if we're interested, look up friends, relatives, and people that have preceded us in death. And then gradually we progress from world to world, literally through billions of worlds, as we slowly but assuredly attain perfection.
Thank you for your call.
All right, well, that was kind of nice, wasn't it?
You bet.
So people should feel very, very excited about the fact that when they pass over, they can do any number of things. What is the Urantia Book's most important message?
I think that the single greatest message of all is that God has a plan for every individual, that every individual can have a personal, religious, spiritual experience. Along that line, maybe I can read very briefly from page 365 in the Urantia Book. And it says, and I'm quoting now, "There is in the mind of God a plan which embraces every creature of all his vast domains. And this plan is an eternal purpose of boundless opportunity, unlimited progress, and endless life. And the infinite treasures of such a matchless career are yours for the striving. All you really have to do is want to do it, and it's yours. It's all out there for all of us."
All right, Barry Bedell, once again, we have run out of time. I apologize, for certainly to you and, of course, to our listeners, but I want to thank you very much for taking this time to come out and be on the show out of your busy day. Do you have anything you'd like to leave everyone with aside from the very, very eloquent statement you just made?
Simply that it's certainly been a pleasure to be here, and anybody that is looking for importance to the really major questions would be pleased, I think, to check out the Urantia Book and read it for themselves.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Barry, for being on the show.